listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, welcoming Sean Davis, a co-founder of The Federalist. Thanks so much for joining us. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Frank. It's an honor.
You're the first fellow that I've had a chance to visit with from what I guess I might call the media about a couple of things in the wake of President Trump's inauguration over the past couple of days. Would you just describe in as succinct a way as you can what you made of, well, for starters, his inaugural address, Sean Davis?
I thought his inaugural address was remarkable because it signaled in its content and how brief it was that Trump was not messing around. This was a man who ran during the campaign on some pretty clear promises, some very populist promises. And rather than show up and give the kind of typical long-winded, flowery speech meant to speak to history for all the ages, Trump went up there and he declared war against the established order. He declared war against just about everyone that was sitting up behind him on that stage. It was short. It was sweet. It was 16 minutes. And I think the political world has not yet grasped the significance of what he did on that stage on Friday.
I believe you've actually called it a declaration of war against the people who were sitting up on that dais with him. It's also been described as dark. But your characterization of it is as strong and a really a throwdown in a way to these guys certainly sets you apart from a lot of the conventional wisdom about it. Where do you think he goes from here? And more to the point, where do you think the Republican leadership on Capitol Hill goes from here, Sean Davis, with that kind of throwdown as his opening shot?
That is a really good question, and I think that's always been the big question with Trump, is we know what he says, but what is he actually going to do? If I were a Republican member of Congress on that stage or a member of Republican leadership, I would be scared because he didn't go up there and mouth platitudes about all the various things that the white paper readers and writers in Republican Washington tend to care about. He didn't get into tax credits. He went up there and it was a throwdown, and it was a very, very clear throwdown that if you've been up in this city talking and blabbing for decades and haven't done anything, your day is over. Your time is done. I think they should be pretty concerned because what Trump sounded like up there was not a Republican so much as a completely independent populist who wasn't really having to do anything that either party told him. And if you're a member of either party's establishment, that should be concerning to you.
Yeah. There is, of course, among our audience, a particular interest in sort of the national security themes of the president's inaugural address. One important element of which was his declaration that it would be America first from now on. Another was his, talk about declarations of war, his pledge to eradicate what he called radical Islamic terrorism from the face of the earth. Give us your flavor of those pronouncements and whether they are likely to be supported by some of the people up on that stage, for example.
Oh, goodness. I think the promise, the clear promise to eradicate Islamic terrorism is something the American people have been waiting to hear for nearly 16 years. It's something that the previous president refused to acknowledge. He went out of his way to never even say the words. He pretended that these were constant lone wolf attacks, not really tied to any sort of specific consistent philosophy. And Trump went up there and he blew that up. And I really think people have been very anxious to hear that. And the national security angle is something that I think so many people in Washington didn't really understand about the support for Trump. This was a guy who didn't really seem all that interested in going and establishing democracy here or there or building this country or messing with this country's affairs. He seemed someone dead set on identifying and eliminating the enemy. And I think that single phrase was probably one of the most significant in his whole speech.
Let me ask you, Sean Davis, about one other piece of this. What's going on with respect to the press and the Trump administration. I must say, I've been in this town for about 40 years, I guess, and I've never seen anything remotely like the vitriol that is being aimed at him. Talk a bit about what some have called a war on the press by him, but it certainly seems as though he's returning fire for the war that has been waged against him for some time by the mainstream media.
Oh, goodness. I think the American media establishment has become completely unhinged and unmoored. And to see why, it's important to back up and look at how we got here. So we had a media that purposefully built Trump up during the Republican primary, believing him to be the weakest person to take on Hillary. So they built him up. They showered him with free press. They made him a star. And in turn, they basically made him the nominee. The second that happened, they set out to destroy him. Dr. Frankenstein saw the havoc that his monster wreaked and was committed to making sure it could do no more. The problem is they lost control of their monster. Dr. Frankenstein couldn't track him down. And so what you see is this nasty vitriol. How dare this person who we made, who we created, have the audacity to go and defeat our candidate, to declare war on us, to mock us by name, to call us out in press conferences, to tell us we do fake news. They hate him with a passion that I don't think they've ever felt for any Republican candidate ever in this nation's history. They hate him. They want to destroy him. And if you thought their behavior during the campaign was unhinged, then my goodness, you have not seen anything yet.
Yeah, stay tuned. Fake news is a term much bandied about now, Sean Davis. Would you describe what that really is? And to what extent are some of the people you've just been talking about guilty of perpetrating it?
Yeah, so fake news is a term that was pretty much invented by the mainstream media after Trump won, as they were scurrying to find some sort of reason why their candidate lost. And so one of the many things they decided was the reason, other than the total recklessness and ineptitude of their candidate, was the proliferation of fake news. Oh, goodness, people don't come to us anymore to hear the truth. They're going to Facebook and they're going to the internet, and my stars and garters, this is the worst thing ever. We have to do something about fake news. They didn't get it then and they don't get it now. It's that people just don't trust them. They no longer have a monopoly, and people no longer feel required or compelled to go to the major networks or the major cable programs or the big papers for their news anymore. And for the people who manage this gate, who restrict access to it, they find that infuriating. How dare anyone else step on our turf? It is our job to tell you what's fake and what's real. Don't you dare go looking out for news on your own.
Yeah. And Sean, are you comfortable with the idea that is now being, I guess, institutionalized by some of the main outlets for news these days, notably Facebook and Google and the like, they will tell us what is fake news on the basis of algorithms or vetters or something? Who made them arbiters of what's not and what is fake news?
No, I think it's ridiculous, but it's as ridiculous as it is predictable. These are organizations, you know, based out of the far left California that are run by leftists. These are the same people who ran out Brenda Nike for having the audacity to donate money to a cause he believed in. So no, it does not surprise me for one second that taking one step back from the gatekeepers, from the news media, to the, you know, search providers and the social networks, it doesn't surprise me at all that they want to also restrict news to whatever they think it is you should be reading. And so the message I would say to conservative media is don't build your businesses around them. Find a way around them. You know, we have deliberately gone out of our way to have an extremely diverse audience that is not beholden to one site or one network or one search provider. And that's something that people in conservative media should really think long and hard about before they give the keys to their sword to these people.
Amen. Sean Davis, co-founder of The Federalist, a terrific publication online. Check it out today, folks. Next up, Gordon Chang. We'll talk with him about the coming conflict with China. Can it be avoided or not? That and more straight ahead.